There's a better place to get your podcast. GCNlive.com. Hundreds of thousands of hours. Archived for your listening pleasure. All free at GCNlive.com.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
We are exploring American monsters with Linda Godfrey, with Gene and Chris on the Paracast this week. Linda, Chris asked you a question.
Where is real-time investigation and research into cryptids going? It's extremely difficult.
Yes, it is. And not that this is ever going to be any, rock solid means, but I do have great hopes for drones, these little drones that can be very inobtrusive and hard to see. You could make them very well camouflaged, use, different forms of flash that are difficult to see. And I think that those might be more effective than a giant blimp that's flying overhead that's really pretty limited in its course. These could be zigzagged around anywhere. And I also, since one of the chief problems of people who have creature encounters being able to take pictures is that by the time they pick up the camera, hold it up, aim it, the creature's often out of sight already. Many, many sightings are just creatures running across roads, and they only last seconds. But if you're wearing your camera on the corner of your glasses, and all you have to do is tap the corner of your glasses frame to take a picture, I think you're going to have a lot better chance of perhaps catching something, even if it's only a blur.
Now, just very quickly here, I'll mention a lot of the newer smartphones, latest from Apple, latest from Samsung, have a couple of taps to get to the camera. Make it easier for you.
Yes, yeah, and that's a good thing. Anything that gets the camera up and aimed faster is going to increase your chances. However, as a veteran of using trail cams, on the other hand, I do know that even when the camera's there and you know that the creature's there because of results that have been produced, you still don't often get the picture. And I've seen time and time again, I've been experimenting with a local property owner that we've been putting deer carcasses out for about a year because he started having some weird mutilation type things of other animals on his property.
With cattle and livestock?
No, just it started with a he's not an animal farmer. He just has crops, and he found a raccoon that had looked like it was zipped open from the chin down to the end, and its entire insides had been scooped out as with like a giant ice cream scoop and laid in one nice piece on the ground next to it, which is something that you just don't see.
That's almost ritualistic.
Yeah, you don't see predators do that. And he had to go do a chore in his field, and he came back about 45 minutes later, and that nice pile was completely gone. He would have had to have seen any human entering. I can't, go into the logistics, but he would have known if a human had come in and taken it. And, birds would pick that apart. Whatever animals you might think of normally being around there, raccoons or whatever, even coyotes, would leave some, but they wouldn't be able to cleanly pick the whole thing up and just scoot off with it, So we started doing deer. I think we're on our, 12th carcass, something like that now, with varying results. But inevitably, whenever the trail camera or cameras can be working perfectly, we get a beautiful shot of something. We may see coyotes. We may see any normal animals that are coming there, vultures, whatever. And then something has obviously picked whatever it was up and climbed over a barbed wire fence with it and run off. And I'm talking 180-pound deer carcass or 60-pound deer carcass.
You mean the whole thing's gone?
Yes, in several instances.
Wow,
yeah.
That is spooky.
During that time, the trail cam does not work, or whatever's happening is obscured by some type of misty type of thing.
Well, that leads me to a question. Are we dealing with real flesh and blood creatures, or are we dealing with something truly paranormal, or are we dealing with something that can either flit in and out of both states of existence, or some that have access to, you know what I'm saying? In other words, are we dealing with something flesh and blood? It's like UFOs. Are they real, or are they phantasms? Are they, you know, some sort of valet-ish control mechanism that's being generated by the planet or something? Or, I mean, what are we dealing with here, do you think? Is it a combination, or is it one or the other?
That's the cliche $64,000 question. You know, and I wish I knew the answer. What I try to do is remain open because I can make a case for not every type of cryptid, but for some of them. You know, for instance, in 90% of the cases that are reported to me of the dog man, it's not doing anything supernatural. It is, you know, running on its hind legs.
It's staying out of sight for generations, you know.
Right, right.
That's the case of being seen.
That could be true, yeah, but it's not doing anything necessarily supernatural. There's another percentage that are, but in most of them they aren't. Still, there's this other percentage of equally sober, credible, and reliable witnesses that see it doing something like glow or appear in this misty column form, that kind of thing. And I can't say, well, these witnesses must be liars because they're seeing something that I can't accept as a natural occurrence in our world, when there's no reason for me to doubt them any more than there is, you know, this other group. And the same thing for Sasquatch. I think it gets even harder there because, you know, there are definitely two camps there. You can make an argument for either way.
Yeah, my favorite dogman sighting was the account in the Hunt for the Skinwalker book about the Sherman Ranch case up in Utah, where two dogmen were seen leaning up against a tree smoking cigarettes.
Yeah, and you know what? I do get sightings like that. Usually they're around various tribal reservations.
Yeah.
I put those in a different category. I don't think they're the same phenomena as the physical, I'm running across the road and you can't get me, dog man type of thing that most people report to me. You know, every once in a while, somebody will see something where I have another report where they're, you know, driving around in a Jeep wearing military uniforms, the dog man that is. You know,
that's rather suggestive.
Yeah, it makes you really wonder. So you do get these other things, and I've said right from my very first book on the subject, The Beast of Bray Road, that it may be that we are looking at several different phenomena, that it doesn't have to be one particular answer for every single sighting of something that looks werewolfish.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was going with the question, is I think that there may be multiple types of phenomena that are piggybacking themselves onto others as a form of misdirection, for lack of a better term. It's almost like they're using other manifestations of something similar to hide their presence, and vice versa.
So you're basically saying what you see is what you're not getting.
Yeah. Well, what you see is what they want you to see. There's almost a reflective quality. I think certain individuals might manifest the phenomenal event in a particular way, while other individuals might somehow manifest it in a different way. I think instead of looking at the actual creature and trying to figure out, well, why is it manifesting in that way, it may be that we should be looking at the perception of the experiencer, and that they may have some sort of, go ahead.
I was going to say, it does seem to be that there, in many cases, is an interaction with the consciousness of the observer. And I can give you a really good example of this that happened to me personally.
Let me just tell you, we have about 50 seconds left of the segment, so just start it here, Linda, and then we'll pick it up.
And this will involve a ghost sighting, which is different and yet not different, that happened to me when I was researching Weird Michigan.
Oh, wow. Okay, then let's pick that up in our next segment. If you want to hear, by the way, our other radio show called After the Paracast, it's available exclusively to those who subscribe to the Paracast Plus at plus.theparacast.com. Plus.theparacast.com. We also give you the ad-free version of the Paracast with better quality audio. So check it out, plus.theparacast.com. You subscribe for a year or more, you get a free copy of Stalking the Tricksters by Christopher O'Brien, and certainly the trickster element is present in These American Monsters, to be sure. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on this special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on our distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, R-O-C-K-O-I-D-S.com.
Have you ever felt like the United States government knows way too much about your financial affairs? I continue to hear stories about property seizures, frozen bank accounts, confiscation of stocks and bonds. It makes me wonder if the U.S. citizen will ever again have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Unfortunately, with the Drug and Money Laundering Act, the IRS Revenue Ruling 6045 of 1984, and the Trading with the Enemy Act and Franklin D. Roosevelt's Executive Order of 1933, some precious metal holdings are subject to government intervention. For this reason, Midas Resources has prepared a report explaining the boundaries of trading precious metals privately. Whether if you have any intention of trading with Midas Resources or not, I have instructed my representatives to give this report out free. Call for your free copy at 1-800-686-2237. When investing, always proceed with caution. Again, call 1-800-686-2237. Exercise your legal right to trade metals privately. 1-800-686-2237.
What good is a Big Berkey water filter?
We get that question a lot here at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. And in a word, the answer is protection. Protection from water main breaks, E. coli contamination, environmental chemical spills, pesticide runoff, chlorine taste and smell, and all forms of fluoride. Plus, Big Berkey water filters are the original gravity water filter system and most trusted on the market for a reason. Tested by multiple independent NSF EPA certified labs, they are the gold standard in water purification. At only 1.7 cents a gallon, a single set of filters can last for 5 to 10 years. That means big savings. Big Berkey, the one that's powerful enough to purify stagnant pond water. Get a Big Berkey today at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. GCN listeners receive 5% off all ceramic filter systems. Visit our website or call 1-877-99-BERKEY. That's 877-99-BERKEY. Big Berkey Water Filters, for the love of clean water.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Here is what one doctor has to say about Extendovite.
I would like to thank you, Don, for making my job so much easier, because your products just make it so simple, right? To fool around with a lot of exotic things that don't work, we can just put them on your product and things start to work almost right away. I've had dozens of patients with heart problems who have corrected them, and what it's doing, there's so much garlic in there that has a yeast-killing effect. The yeast is a big problem in the gut, pushes the liver hard. It also has metal chelating effect, and most of the other herbs in there I find that strengthen the arteries. They help to neutralize free radicals. Your remedy close to what we do in our program as you can get as far as one supplement goes. It's working on the gut, it's working on the liver, it's working on the arteries. What more can you ask for?
To get your Extendivite, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Chris O'Brien is working on his best tricksterish voice, but sometimes when you do a tricksterish voice, it comes across like a leprechaun, but I'm not going to have him do that right now. He did that years ago, and some listeners are still here, so I don't want to upset them. I'm serious about this. Let's talk to Linda Godfrey. You were going to answer a big, long question there that was kind of framed. Would you go ahead?
Sure. It's the idea as to whether unusual events just present themselves or if they are interacting with us somehow. And when I was running around, I put 5,000 miles on my car running around Michigan for the Weird Michigan book in the Weird U.S. series by Barnes & Noble. I was in Manistee, Michigan, and managed to locate the town historian, which is usually my first move. He directed me to a very haunted brick building in downtown Manistee that once was a tavern and living quarters for a German family where there was supposed to have been a young man who died of tuberculosis named William, and they called him Basement Billy because he was often seen in the basement. And people would also see him outside the building wearing these late 19th century clothing items and looking malicious, that kind of thing. The woman who owned the apartment building did not know I was coming. I had never heard of it before that day, but she took me down into the basement, which was basically empty, and any pipes were wrapped with brown paper, so there was no reflective surface. There was one light bulb at one end and one light bulb by the stairs. We stood in utter darkness for about 5 minutes, and I was just about to tell her to turn the lights back on. And this floating ball, I did not say anything at the time, partly because I was too shocked. This floating globe about the size of a basketball, and it was near this low ceiling. There were probably 7-foot ceilings, maybe about 10 feet away from me, and it had kind of triangular projections on either side, suddenly appeared. And I thought my eyes were playing tricks. You know, I looked away and I looked back, and it was still there. And it seemed to me that it was somewhat conscious of me, that it was these are very subjective things, but that it was somehow expecting something of me. And then just as I went, remembered I had a camera around my neck and I was supposed to be taking a picture, and started to raise it up, then it started slowly fading away. Well, I found out that the woman also saw the apparition, except what she saw was the full-on apparition of Basement Billy. In other words, she saw a young man wearing clothing. I saw the essence, I believe.
Yeah, interesting. That gets into that whole idea of the experiencer is somehow manifesting the details of something that's there, but the actual presentation of it is totally hinging on the person's own sort of consciousness and their interaction with it, which kind of brings me to a little side question is, why do ghosts wear clothing?
Exactly. You'd think they'd, you know, get those things, but yeah, who knows why ghosts do anything, really?
Well, the other thing is, he, of course, if we look at the TV sets, the ghosts will wear clothing, but always the same clothing. They can't change their clothes.
Yeah, that's true. There was a British BBC series that became an American series about a ghost, a werewolf, and a vampire.
Being human.
Being human. Yep, exactly.
Walked into a bar.
It sounded like that. But that was the whole thing with the ghost in the show, was that she could never have a wardrobe change, because whatever she died in, that was what she had to wear always, all the time.
So if she died naked,
well, then it would have been a different kind of show, I think.
Well, then it wouldn't be on the Sci-Fi Channel or BBC America. It would be on Showtime or something like that.
Exactly.
The actors in both versions of the show were really good, and one of the actors who was part of the second cast in the BBC America version, the BBC version of Being Human, it now plays on this show about fairy tales coming real once upon a time on ABC.
Mm-hmm.
You know who I'm talking about, this kind of thin, light-haired guy. I forget his name. And then in the American version, the guy who played the werewolf played Jimmy Olsen in the movie Superman Returns.
Huh.
You take a lot of notes on these shows, boy.
I just watch the shows, and as Mr. Spock once said, I remember.
Well, that's great. Yeah, I didn't like the American version as much as the BBC one, but that's neither here nor there. But it does pick up a bit of lore, you know, which is that they appear in whatever they seem to have died in.
Yeah, that makes sense, I guess, on one level. It's logical. But let's kind of get back to your book here real quick. One of the things that I found in my research of stalking the tricksters and looking around for phantasmal forms and tricksters type forms in Native American lore, there are two consistencies that I see. The most consistent, and this is cross-regional, every regional groups of Indians has mythologies and legends and stories of monstrous winged creatures. And that, to me, is very significant, because it doesn't matter where you go in North America, the indigenous population of that particular region will have lore that talks about thunderbirds and giant winged creatures. Let's get into that subject a little bit here. It's fascinating the way that you've really dug up some very interesting and I don't think very well-known examples of these winged monstrous forms. Why don't you give us a rundown on some of your favorites and point out any consistencies that you see?
Well, one of the things that I really thought was cool about this is that the giant 20-foot wingspan creatures are not just ancient Native American legends. People are still seeing them today.
Yeah.
I started out the whole book with what I think was one of the best large bird sightings ever, because this was in northern Wisconsin. Most of the time when people see a large bird, it's up in the sky. It's notoriously difficult to accurately estimate the size of something that's just in the sky with no context next to it for comparison. But this guy saw it standing in a meadow, and it was huge. He's over 6 feet tall. This thing was way taller than him. He also was able to see it take off and then kind of try and desperately beating the air with its wings, trying to get enough lift to get its massive body off the ground, and then kind of careen down over an asphalt road where he was able to see that its wingtips touched either side of the road. And the road, I measured myself personally, was about 20 feet wide. So that's how large it was. He was able to run the whole gamut. But what he saw was a feathered creature, which when I tried to look up various Native American depictions of the Thunderbird, they were usually almost always feathered. Well, say, well, there were Thunderbirds, and they're talking about the sightings of the supposedly extinct pterosaurs, which some people call, you know, just one type of that would be the pterodactyl. But that doesn't really fit the mold of the large winged, feather-winged Thunderbirds. And we had a whole flap of these Thunderbird-winged, 20-foot wingspan, feathered creatures, like around in the 70s. And in Illinois, the best-known one was where it picked up a little boy and ran away with him in Lawndale, Illinois. And I find that amazing that they tally so well to the ancient Native American descriptions of these Thunderbirds. And then, you know, you even go down into South America, and you've got Quetzalcoatl, which is the feathered flying serpent, which is another type of great feathered bird. It's got a little different aspect to it in the way that it's more like a serpent, which makes it sound almost more like a feathered dragon.
Dragon, yeah.
Let's go into more of this in our next segment with Linda Godfrey and Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Not just an alternative to the mainstream media. We're the premier independent talk radio network. We are GCN.
Graphic Converter is the image manipulation tool for the rest of us. It does not use any database. You get full control of all your files. Want to view the images of a folder? Drag it into Graphic Converter, and a powerful browser opens up to show your image files. You could use it for slideshows. You could use it to import images from digital cameras or from scanners. Need to do some image editing? You can do that too in Graphic Converter. Also, print catalogs. Convert from so many formats I can't even list them. Download now to see if Graphic Converter is good for you, like 1.5 million other users. Guess what? You could save money when you buy Graphic Converter. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL. Use the coupon code NIGHTOWL to get a special price for Graphic Converter. Go to LemkeSoft.com. That's LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com. LemkeSoft.com.
Attention listeners, SurvivalLife.com is giving away free EverStrike permanent matches for a limited time only. These matches are waterproof and will light in any weather condition, rain, snow, or sleet. It will still throw a spark. Its built-in ferro rod strikes at 3,000 degrees, and it is good for 15,000 strikes. Normally, $15. Today, it's free. Get yours at FreeWaterproofMatch.com. Again, that's FreeWaterproofMatch.com. Hurry, supplies are limited. Visit FreeWaterproofMatch.com today.
It's no secret that government and big business buy in bulk and get huge discounts not available to the little guy. Until now. Introducing a breakthrough crowd buying website where people can join together, buy in bulk, and get massive discounts on millions of popular products. It's TogetherSave.com. TogetherSave.com. You can save 20, 30, or even 50% off tablets, smartphones, cars, appliances, textbooks, sports equipment, video games, and much more. All with free delivery. Check it out. TogetherSave.com. Visit now and start group buying today at TogetherSave.com.
The freeze-dry guy, leader in the preparedness industry for 44 years, is closing his California warehouse. Don't miss out on this huge warehouse sale and receive discounts from 30 to 40% off on the finest Mountain House and Packaway brand freeze-dried and dehydrated foods for long-term food storage or even everyday use. Plus deep discounts on all in-stock survival gear. The Freeze-Dry Guy is offering a wide selection of freeze-dried foods in number 10 cans and even individually packaged entrees. Remember, meats, vegetables, fruits, and long-range patrol rations are the main components for any long-term food storage. This is limited to stock on hand, so hurry and call 866-404-3663 or 530-798-4414. Remember, as always, free shipping to the lower 48 states. So hurry up and call 866-404-3663 or 530-798-4414. Remember, this is limited to stock on hand. The Freeze-Dry Guy is your choice for survival food in an uncertain world.
You pick up the receiver. With your heart racing and sweat dripping from your forehead, you finally muster the courage to dial the number to call into your favorite talk radio show. It rings once, twice, and then...
Hello, it's GCN. What's your name and the state you're calling from?
Surprised you got through, you squeak out...
Jason from Minnesota.
Please hold.
As you patiently wait for your turn, you begin to daydream about being a famous talk radio host and what it would be like to have your own show.
Jason from Minnesota, you're up.
Millions of loyal listeners worldwide waiting to call and talk to you.
Caller, are you there?
Cheering crowd surrounds you, calling out your name.
Going once, twice. Okay, we gotta move on to the next caller.
You blew it.
Huh? Wait, no!
Interact with the host you're listening to right now online at GCNLive.com. Click on the community link. Engage with other listeners. Ask questions. Start debates. Don't agree with the host? Let them know. Be a part of the community at GCNLive.com.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
With Gene and Chris in the Paracast, American monsters, bird-like creatures, all sorts of things. And we continue our focus with Linda Godfrey. Chris, you want to pick up on the questioning?
You know, again, that we're getting into this differentiation between types based on their, you know, their activity. And, you know, down in Texas, for instance, there's fairly recently, within the last 5 or 6 years, there have been sightings of these pterosaur flying reptile forms. And let's remember, everybody, that when you talk about something flying, in the case that Linda described in her last segment, where the witness was able to ascertain the size in their minds very accurately of a 20-foot wingspan. Now, that's twice as big as the largest known flying bird, which I believe is a Peruvian condor, as maybe some of them go up to 11 feet, maybe just a shade above that. But we're talking about something twice that big. So, you know, you mentioned this to an ornithologist or some sort of aviary expert, a bird expert, and they'll scoff and say, well, that's, you know, That's impossible. It's ludicrous. And yet we have very good, reliable witnesses that are reporting creatures that are twice as big as any known flying creature.
Right.
You know, again, you mentioned the Illinois sightings. What do you remember what year in the 70s that was? I know there was the famous one in the 1800s where there was a little boy picked up at along the Missouri or the Mississippi River or somewhere and carried off in front of a whole town picnic. What year was the flap that you were referring to? What time period?
Well, the one that the Lawndale incident belonged in was in 1977. It was so big in the papers. There were either one or two of these giant birds flying all around Illinois, and the press had nicknamed it Big Claw, which I think is kind of funny, you know, because you have Bigfoot, Big Claw. And then one of them grabbed onto this little 10-year-old boy and started flying away with it. He weighed about 60 pounds. So you can imagine how large the bird would have to be to pick up a 60-pound boy. And luckily, his mother was screaming bloody murder, chasing the bird as it was trying to get off the ground with him. And finally, he was dropped and wasn't really hurt, luckily. But that's kind of when this all was going on, was the 70s.
Mother's worst nightmare.
Yeah, can you imagine? Yeah, you just wouldn't even think. But, you know, talking about credible witnesses, that first one that I had mentioned before, this witness was impeccable. He was a, you know, well-to-do businessman. This was a morning sight. He was out for morning bike rides, so the weather was excellent. The light was excellent. Perfect visibility. He ran into the field and actually got quite close to it. He said he was so excited. He put his bike down, and just like a kid running to meet Mickey Mouse, you know, because he saw this thing that was so wonderful and unusual.
Travis Walton.
He got about halfway into the field and thought, what if it has a nest? And that was about the time the bird turned and looked at him, and then it started, luckily for him, taking off rather than, you know, taking after him. It's really hard to argue with a witness like that. He gave his full name, you know, he didn't mind people knowing it, wanted nothing for it. You know, why would a person like that make this sort of thing up? And he had no background in the history of giant birds or anything like that. It was a totally new phenomenon to him.
Yeah. So what other types of bird forms do we have? Let's say the southeast would be an example of an area that you wouldn't normally associate with giant winged creatures. You know, Mothman would be kind of an exception that's a little further north. But do we have any sightings of these creatures in the deep south, let's say, in the more kind of tropical areas of the country?
I think they generally, you know, Texas has had a lot of the pterosaur-type things, as you have said. And then we have, well, let's see, I'm kind of combing my brain here, trying to think of that part of the territory. I'm thinking of, there are the kind of bat-winged ones, which are like the Jersey Devil up in New Jersey, which gets you into a whole other type of thing. By the way, these bat-winged creatures show up in Pennsylvania and Ohio and even over downtown Chicago, which I think is really, really weird.
Why don't you give us a little detail on that one?
Yeah, this was within about the same time frame. And again, I don't always have these things perfectly, you know, rooted in my brain to give you the year. But in several different incidents, these creatures that were, they looked like man-sized but with very large wingspans, and they were bat-like wings, were seen, let's see, there was one that flew on August 22nd, 2011 and surprised a married couple, and they actually got a photo of it. And this was in the UFO casebook. I found this one. And then a month later, six students in the University Park neighborhood also saw a bat-like creature, and this time they watched as it launched itself from the ground and made one of those giant whooshing sounds. And many of these sightings do include that detail of the giant whooshing sound. That's really different, too. Then, I mean, you can explain things. You know, if it's just up in the air, you can say, well, they were just seeing a bat. But they saw the man-sized creature on the ground launch and then fly away. That's really hard to explain. And there were six of them, you know, so six people watching.
And that's a recent sighting. That's only about four years ago, not even.
Yeah, exactly. And there was a third one, too, and there was a group of people, and this thing was only about 12 feet overhead and when it swooped over, and they described it as a man with bat wings. Now, I suppose some of these you could explain away as perhaps if there was a cliff or something nearby, maybe a city building would also qualify as being somebody in one of these glider type of sport wing things, you know, and these get more and more sophisticated all the time, where people can...
Wing suits, yeah.
Wing suits and different types of gliders, exactly. So you never know. Maybe that's what some of them were seeing, but it still seems kind of unlikely for being able to explain away all of them.
Right. But, you know, interesting to note that one of the most recent consistent outbreaks of similarly described sightings in the San Luis Valley, in the west side of the valley, are flying humanoid reports of human-like forms that have giant bat wings. And I think we're up to around 19 or 20 individual reports, including the town garbage man early in the morning, the town mailman, and two law enforcement officials in different separate sightings. These are fairly consistent around the country, as I found looking into this a little bit more, but they're rare compared to the giant bird forms. I think, you know, dollars to donuts, the bird form is the more likely type of description that you're going to encounter. But right. So what do you make of this? I mean, it smacks of something paranormal because these, you know, if there's a breeding population of these things, we should be able to zero in on them easier. Where they nest, where their rookery is.
Right.
You know, there's just something that smacks of the paranormal to me about them.
Yeah, because you just can't imagine where these creatures could be breeding and flying around in numbers large enough to have a population without being seen somewhere. Now, one thing that did occur to me was when I was looking at all the dates for these sightings and how many of them occurred in the mid-70s, late 60s and mid-70s, I just coincidentally came, or synchronistically perhaps is a better word, came across something on when the Amazon highway started to be built through the Amazon rainforest. Now, the Amazon rainforest, you know, has been just a sanctuary for different sorts of creatures for many years until, of course, Western civilization started going in there and tearing out the trees to put a big, nice highway through. And when that started happening was about the same time as this massive bird flap that went up through the Midwest, and you can almost see a migratory corridor going up along the Mississippi River.
Yeah, good point. That's also when they were starting to expand the cattle ranches, too, into the Amazon.
Yeah, and so you have this opening up of this territory that had formerly been sort of sacrosanct and where they probably felt safe, and then all of a sudden they're getting rousted out and have to go somewhere. And the Mississippi River, you know, along much of it, there are great cliffs. I know that where it forms the border between Wisconsin and Minnesota, there's some wonderful cliff areas. And then, of course, we've had sightings of what might be relics of the species of Washington's eagle that was documented by Audubon.
We have Linda Godfrey joining Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
A little right, a little left, but always independent-minded. The Genesis Communications Network, GCN.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there's The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
So here's what happened. I was placing an order online. The site went down. It took hours before it returned, but I had already placed the order with another company. If your site goes down, you could lose business. And if you have a business or personal site, you'll want to know it's easy to run and it will stay online. At iWeb, your site is hosted on one of the most reliable networks in the world. Talk to a sales rep at iWeb.com. Use the promo code TECHNIGHTOWL for a special discount.
As the new world order continues to tighten its grip on every facet of our lives, we're all asking ourselves, how can we maintain our independence? The answer is clear. Get prepared, and you get prepared now. Now the only question left is, where do we begin? My Patriot Supply is here to help. Call 800-247-3070 to get started with your 72-hour emergency food supply for only $10. We're even covering the cost of shipping. Are you willing to rely on the government and FEMA in the event of an emergency? Call 800-274-3070 to get started with your 72-hour emergency food supply for only $10. You won't be able to find this deal online, and there is a strict limit of 4 per caller, so don't wait. Call now, 800-274-3070. That's 800-274-3070. Call right now.
Ouch! My back is out again!
Hi, Dr. Ortman with Wellspring Spinal Care. If you're experiencing neck, mid, or lower back pain, this information is for you. One of the complaints that I hear is patients receive their typical adjustment, only having to repeat them as the pain returns. Putting the bones back in place is only half of the battle. At Wellspring Spinal Care, we have the entire solution. We use the NUCA approach, utilizing three-dimensional x-rays and gentle touch technology to deliver specific correction. We then design design a custom nutritional supplement program which provides essential nutrients targeting the areas of concern. With a NUCA approach and proper nutrition, you'll be on your way to a faster and more permanent recovery. To get you on the road to wellness, visit drortman.com. That's drortman.com. Or call us today, 952-303-9124. That's 952-303-9124. Wellspring Spinal Care, chiropractic done right.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, this is Tracy Torme, screenwriter-producer. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
It's Monsters All the Time this week with Linda Godfrey and Gene and Chris on the Paracast. We've been covering all sorts of case histories and the fact that as we explore the wilderness, we kind of kick these creatures out. Did we frighten them, Linda, or they were just hiding there, and because we never explored the area, they didn't feel disturbed?
Well, and again, this is pure speculation. You know, it's not even a theory because it's not testable. It's just pure speculation. But my idea was, well, if all of a sudden these giant machines are coming here and ripping out their habitat, they're forced to go elsewhere, and they're going to look for some sort of place where, like, cliffs are a natural place for anything that has a hard time getting lift because it's so big, because they can jump off and have air streams and wind forces to kind of play around with. So it makes a lot of sense that they would fly up a major river corridor, and then you end up with sightings of Washington's eagle or a bat squatch in La Crosse, Wisconsin, that sort of thing.
You know, it's interesting to note, too, that river systems tend to be epicenters for sightings of cryptids of all types, aquatic, land, air, the Mississippi, the Ohio. You can almost look at a map of sighting reports, and they do tend to cluster around the larger river systems, which leads us to another category, which a lot of people would be surprised to find the vast numbers of aquatic monsters that have been sighted over generations in North America. Of course, we have our famous Champi up in Lake Champlain. What's the Ogopogo? Ogopogo up in Canada. And, of course, the most famous of all, of course, is Nessie, the Loch Ness monster. But there are, looking through your book, I was astounded at how many different types of frogmen, mermaids, giant snakes, all sorts of different types of aquatic creatures that are, not only in freshwater rivers, but also in some of the estuaries and bays and harbors in North America. Why don't you give us a rundown of some of your favorites?
Well, yeah, I had a lot of favorites. And yet, you know, if there was any section where I really felt I was giving it short shrift, it was this one, because there were so many lake and river monsters all over the country. All I could do was pick out a few of each type. It was really difficult and frustrating. There were so, so many other ones. But it runs the gamut from, you know, I started with aquatic aliens because most people don't think of those as water monsters. But the fact is, many UFOs are seen coming out of rivers, lakes, and oceans. There's a growing theory that UFOs are actually living things. Some are hard nuts and bolts, and some are living things, according to some people. And again, you can get into the two camps. But certainly the creatures fit our definition of monsters. You know, they look like some sort of weirdly deformed humans, and that's from a very human-centric point of view. they probably look perfectly normal to themselves. But again, the big eyes, sometimes there's glowingness, the little claw-like hands abducting people. So I started out with those, thinking they were one really interesting category to look at. Then you've got the classic mermaids, half human, half fish, which is a very, very ancient idea, too, going way back to whatever we have records of. People are talking about half people, half fish, especially you think of the Greek legends about the Greek gods. They're very prominent. You've got different kinds of reptoids like Gator Man. One of my most chilling things in the book, I think, was the chapter on Gator Man, which is a young man who I really did a lot of background research, and he checked out in every way, studying oceanography and different types of marine biology. And he's had what looks like this giant, actually extinct type of alligator that walks. It does walk on its hind legs in ways that he's never seen modern gators do, sort of stalking him, whether by boat or all the way home to his own pier. Seemed like it was attacking his boat when he was out there one day in it. And it's been this sort of ongoing thing for 2 years. It calmed down recently. I've stayed in touch with him. But it sort of reminded me of, you know, in Peter Pan where Captain Hook has this gator with the clock in its stomach, and every time it gets near him, it's going tick, 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 tick. And that's kind of how this thing has been following this one guy around, kind of like it fixated on him. And then you get to the classic sea monsters, and you go back and look, and there was so much going on. This is going back to the 17, 1800s when they were seen regularly as the first ships from Europe were coming into the eastern coastal waters of the United States, and they're documenting these things that look like giant living creatures, and people were seeing them from shore. There were many, many records of them. I was really very surprised when I looked to see this, you know, at how many there were from centuries ago. And then as you go state by state, almost every state has its lakes that have monsters in them up to the present day.
Yeah. Did you see the article that came out recently about the guys, the Champy, Lake Champlain monster investigators that had an acoustic instrument they were towing behind the boat, and they picked up what sounded like the sounds of beluga whales is how, when they did research into the actual acoustic signature of these screeches and other high-pitched sounds, the only thing that they could come up with that was similar was beluga whales, of all things.
Yeah.
Which, of course, does not conform to your typical champ description, which is more like a Loch Ness monster, long necks, or a plesiosaur type form. But to me, it's intriguing that you could have one form possibly imitating the vocalizations of another form, if you want to go and kind of what if the data.
Right, and maybe it is some sort of unknown form of sea creature that would have a similar vocal structure. Who knows? It's really hard to tell. But, you know, and in a lot of these cases, I do think that, getting back to the original question of, you know, how do we know which ones of them have a basis in an actual natural creature, it could be that some of these lake and water monsters do, because I really think that even though it's true that many of the lakes they're said to be in are supposed to be too small for their breeding purposes, that maybe there are deep underwater fishers that go other places, maybe to other larger bodies of water, even oceans. I don't know if this has ever been proved, but there are many places in our ocean bottoms and larger bodies of water that haven't really been well explored, you know, for various reasons.
Yeah, 2% of the world's oceans have been explored. I mean,
exactly.
So vast. I mean, that's the great unknown on this planet, obviously. I was always struck, of course, the famous book about UFO correlations with water, bodies of water, of course, is Ivan T. Sanderson's classic Invisible Residence. And he made the astounding statement in there, which I kind of had to read it, you know, twice, because I couldn't believe what I was reading. He says that 50% of all UFO sightings that he was aware of have to do with bodies of water. with in conjunction with UFOs. So maybe there's something to that.
Yeah, I think that there is. There's a really big connection. People, especially around the Great Lakes, there are many sightings that bear that out. And I had a chance when I was working for the newspaper. You know, I started out as a newspaper reporter for 10 years. And that was, all those 10 of those years were after I broke the story of the Beast Spray Road. I did very little on that during that time. But I was able to interview an airport director who had one time been in the U.S. military stationed in Puerto Rico. And he said that they would constantly, they had cameras mounted on their guns, and they would watch through the scopes just to see the UFOs coming out of the water. And they would always take pictures of them. And the next day, there would always be men in black there to take away whatever they had taken pictures of and go with it. But he said it was just common knowledge that if you looked through the gun scopes, you could see these things very, very often. And they actually had people whose business it was to go around and compensate farmers for the damage that UFO did to their crops and that sort of thing. And he was on one such expedition, and the farmer was really, really angry. And they could see this giant burned circle that lit up their Geiger counters, and on one side of the circle was half a dead cow, and on the other side of the circle was a totally burnt to a crisp remains of a dead cow.
Let's stop it here and pick up on this fascinating thing. First, we've talked about possible radiation impact from people who get close to UFOs, such as in Rendlesham Forest, the case of John Burroughs, who only recently got coverage by the VA. Linda Godfrey with Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
We are the premier independent talk radio network, the Genesis Communications Network, GCN.
Are you hungry for delicious, nutritious, rich, and satisfying home-cooked meals? Discover the Vita Clay 4-in-1 Smart Organic Cooker. Unglazed Zeesha Clay, an ancient secret that makes this fast multi-cooker so special. Infusing your food with incredible flavors, perfect texture, vitamins, and minerals for your good health. It's a slow cooker, rice cooker, a steamer, plus a yogurt maker. Go to VitaClayChef.com and enter promo code RADIO20 for 20% off at checkout. That's VitaClayChef.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number. 1-855-905-MY-TV. The more cable TV rates go up, the better digital satellite TV looks. Say goodbye to the cable guy and get more of your favorite channels in 100% digital quality for less money. Call 1-855-905-MY-TV. Sign up for packages starting as low as $19.99, and there's no equipment to buy. You get free HD TV upgrade, a free DVR upgrade, and free professional installation. You control what you watch, when you watch it. Record your favorite shows. Pause and rewind live TV. Even skip the commercials. Watch local channels too. At just $19.99, what are you waiting for? Pull out your major credit or debit card. Call 1-855-905-MYTV. 1-855-905-MYTV. Say goodbye to the cable guy. Cut costs and get more. 1-855-905-MYTV. 1-855-905-MYTV.